You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand, and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced them I had to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Like, landed on the ground, I'm kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and we're talking moccasins and joke. Find a party they're gonna have. Out in the St. John's swamps.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, hello, everybody. This is Marco Bill. Tom couldn't make it tonight. He got caught in a meeting here a little while ago, and he had to call me to cancel out. But he'll be back here next week. I got to tell you, there's so many things going on in for us in the past couple of weeks. I don't know if many of you know this. I've had it posted for a while now, but both Gravitas for the VOD, Video On Demand, and then the Channel Sources for the DVD, we've had contracts with them for quite some time. And, of course, they've both initiated new contracts to, well, the VOD contract will cover somewhere near 70-some million homes on cable TV, and the DVD will cover somewhere around 15,000 shelves in the United States alone. So what they're doing is they got four movies, Bigfoot Lives, In the Shadow of Bigfoot, Bigfoot Lives 2, Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax, and those four movies will be basically on a special in February here. They'll be announcing and advertising it around, probably around the U.S. and the different cable TVs and other areas here. And so you got a new chance to watch it if you've never seen them before. And just as well, not only did that happen last couple weeks, the Bigfoot Lives 3 just came out and is currently available. I just posted it up on the webpage yesterday. And it's a pretty, should be a pretty interesting, there's a trailer for it if you'd like to take a look at it. Anyway, that's a lot of things going on at once here. And we've been kind of busy the last few weeks. But that's what you're supposed to do. We're supposed to keep busy. But other than that, I wanted to just extend just a big hello and warm welcome to all of our listeners out there, all of our friends and family, our Bigfoot friends and family. Many of you are you know, frequent listeners. You're dedicated, loyal, and we wouldn't be anything without you. And we certainly do. We certainly do value your listenership and your friendship. Many of you call us and send us emails, and let us know when we screw up. Let us know when you like something, and we appreciate that. What I'd like to do tonight is we couldn't do it last week. Rob Price is one of our Bigfoot researchers. We had a call about 3 weeks ago from a lady and her husband in Iowa, and they were having all kinds of things happening in their right out, you know, near their home. And the lady called us and asked us if we would, you know, do something about it and take a look at what was going on, because she just didn't know and they wanted to find out everything that was going on. Well, Tom got a hold of Rob Price, and of course Rob, being dedicated the way he always is, he went out there for a few days to take a look at what was going on. Rob, how are you tonight, my friend?
Doing good, Marco. Glad to be back on, man.
Well, Rob, why don't you give us, could you give us a little thumbnail sketch of what took place before you went out there?
Well, it was kind of a fly by the seat of the pants like we do things. It was an all of a sudden thing. I think we'd known about it for about a day, and I got the phone call to go up and contact this lady named Melissa. And she's a really nice lady, great family. I have to say they're very, very hospitable people. And guys, as anybody that's in the traveling or whatnot like I would, they're great people to run across. And I got a call. We talked about what was going on, what had been seen. And she had a sighting back in October of last year on the 22nd, I believe. I've got that in my notes. Yes, it was on the 22nd of October last year. And she had seen something while fishing. Her and her husband go out fishing in this same area quite frequently. It's down on along a river up there, which is all farmland. Pretty much the only trees you're going to see are along waterways in this area. You're not.
Well, Iowa is corn country.
Yeah, you're not going to see. You're not going to see many trees unless you're along a waterway.
Right.
But I reviewed the evidence. I had some pictures and whatnot sent, and looked at through the tracks and the pictures. She emailed me some pictures, and I got up with Tom, and I said, he asked me, you know, prior to this, if I could go up there with him, go up there. And I told him, I said, well, you know, let's see what's going on. So he sent me, he said, I'd be interested in doing it. So he sent me the stuff over, and I looked at it all, and I said, well, it looks promising. It looks like, you know, we can go up there and we can find out what's going on anyway, and possibly, you know, ease this woman's a state of mind a little bit, because she is, quite frankly, I don't know the proper words to put it in, but she's really disturbed by what she saw that evening. And
they're afraid to go out at night.
Oh, they are. She wouldn't go out there at night. I mean, I tried to get her to come with me, and no, that's not how it was. That wasn't about to happen.
Now, but, you know, Rob, one of the things that happened prior to you going out there, and I'm sure you do know, but was she had gotten gifts like bones and vertebrae and other turtle shells and things like that, you know, had collected those, and she had, besides the photograph, and the Saturday before you went out there, the week before you went out, another organization went out there and collected all that stuff, put it in a nice little box, and took off. And said they'd be back in the spring.
I'm well aware of that. I mean, she's really, really ill at that organization right now, for good reason. She is in the process of trying to get those items back so that we can look at them and find out what's going on, you know, get to the bottom of things. That's that's something I told her. I said, you should have never let him have it. She said, well, I never give him permission to take it. She's like, he grabbed the box and left. And I didn't know that he picked the box up when he left, and he was gone and had it. So he took it without her permission.
And the next day, there's actually two people there. And the next day, they had it published on one of the websites, and they had it published with her photographs and other things. And they had the story as though that the researchers had the encounter, and they didn't even mention her and her husband.
That's correct. That is also very correct. And she did not give them permission to post her photograph on that website at all.
No.
That was another thing. She wasn't real keen on the idea of having her picture on a website to begin with. And I asked her about it, and I told her, I said, you know, if at any time you want it gone, we can take it down. You know, it's not a big deal. I was like, Marco, we'll take care of that. You know, and I know me and you had a discussion about this earlier, Marco, you know, just me
sure.
and you. But, I told her, I said, that's no problem. I said, if you give us anything and we take it, we will do what we say we're going to do. And if in the process of doing that you're not satisfied with it, all you have to do is contact me, Marco, Tom. We will send it back to you.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, that's
every time, all the time we do that.
But
Well, you know what? Can I tell you something, Rob?
Mm-hmm.
She gave me a call this morning. And she got an email from this organization, and they threatened her. They basically said, if you have anything to do with Tom Biscardi and his people, we're not going to publish your story, your encounter experience. And she said, so?
Well, they already published it without her permission. So
I know.
What can you do? I mean, you know, we just keep knocking on, Mark.
I know.
That's
amazing, isn't it? So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just had to get all this stuff out. There's so many crooked people out there. Excuse me. They take advantage of people.
I'd like to let everyone know what the circumstances of this trip entailed. It entailed getting the vehicle ready, which at the current time we decided it was cheaper to go with a rental vehicle, gas prices being what they are today. So we went with a rental vehicle, had to line all that up, got all that squared away. We had to call, get the motel rooms reservations, all that set up, and then had to calculate drive time and all that good stuff and got up there. And in the process of getting there, about the time I got to Nashville, the whiteout blizzard came in, and I had to drive for about 4 hours at less than 25 miles an hour on the interstate. Wind blowing 40 miles an hour. The snow was coming in sideways. You couldn't see anything. Just a complete whiteout. I mean, I had to drive pretty much by feel of the road to know that I was still on asphalt. And about three and a half, 4 hours of that, then they finally got the plows out on the road and everything and got it shoveled off where we could get on to where we needed to go to. But that set us back. You know, I was going to get in there that night in the p.m. hours and go on out to the spot and get everything set up the night before. Well, we ended up getting up there about 4 a.m., and that really put a damper on things because I had to get in, get everything unpacked, checked into the room, then I had to haul Bud about another 30 miles out to where this lady lives because that was the closest motel room. I don't know if
right.
people are familiar with that area that we were in, but it is
it's a rural area
up there. Yeah, it's very rural. There's not much up there. I mean, they got the numbers on the sign for populations for the little towns, and some of them don't even hit three digits.
Yep.
But anyway, we get up there, and I come in and do the meet and greet with the lady. First thing the next morning, I think it was about 7:30, 8 o'clock, we sit down, and she recounts her story with me. Now, bear in mind, I haven't slowed down yet, haven't rested yet. We left and drove for all day, all night, got up there, and I'm meeting with the lady the next morning. So I meet with the lady, everything goes fine, you know, nice people, great people. Come to find out, she's off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Good. We got 3 days out in the field. She wants to go. I'm not pressuring her to do anything she doesn't want to do. And I was like, you know, I would like for you to come out with me and show me where these things happened at so that we can get a better idea from your perspective so we can document this the right way. So she agreed to, but she was still very hesitant about it. She didn't want to go out there, period. I mean, it's, you know, it's, this lady has been scared to death up there.
Yeah, well, they seen that thing. It was pretty big. She said she was, she's still scared.
She's still scared. Exactly. She said she will be for quite some time because that was what she and her husband considered her fishing hole, and now they're going to have to rethink their terminology that it is not their fishing hole. It may belong to something else. But yes. We get up there. It's about 7 degrees, I think, that day. The sun finally come up. It was somewhere around the area of 7 degrees. Very cold, very harsh. They got about, I think, 16 inches of snow that night. So I'm up there, and after the meet and greet, we talk. I get her story, write it all down, and me and her hit the woods. So we go out there to the area. Well, I set up and do everything by the book like we always do, the full investigation, set the cameras up, everything. I get it all set up, and I come back that evening, and this is wading in knee-deep snow. I don't know how many people are aware of, you know, what walking in those conditions are like on rough terrain and knee-deep snow.
Well, and you didn't tell them it snowed while you were there. It wasn't snowing before you got there. It snowed, what, 4 feet or 3 feet or something like that?
It did. It snowed the whole way up there, and it snowed all day the next day while I was out there in the field doing this.
Right.
The pictures from the website, I don't know if how good some of them come out or not, but it's actually still snowing when all those pictures are taken. The river's froze completely solid. I'm out there walking on it. But anyway, when I look around there, I track around the area. I'm like, well, we're not going to go too far right now. I don't want to disturb anything. I mean, we got fresh powder on the ground. If anything comes through here, we will definitely get some tracks or sign. So I bear in mind, everywhere I go and she goes, and I take pictures and document all that so I'll know when I come back if anybody or anything else has been through there, you know, in the area of the snow where what hasn't been disturbed thus far. So I come back about, I think it was 9 o'clock I got back out there that evening. The temperatures were somewhere in the negatives. I don't know exactly. I just remember it being very, very frigid. But I get the camera set up and everything, and I leave the cameras on all night. I'm sitting there probably about 60 yards from one of them and about 120 yards from another one and about 25 yards from another one. I've got an area pegged out there that I think's a real nice hot area. You know, according to what she said and according if everything matches up, if this thing's coming back through here, we're going to get a snap of it if it comes through here with where I have these cameras set up at. Well, I sit there till about 1:30 in the morning. At that point in time, I had to get up and actually get in the vehicle because it was so cold and I'd done been still for so long, I had to get warmed up because it's freezing, Marco.
I understand.
But I got in the vehicle and got warmed up. Nothing went on. I sat in the vehicle for about 25, 30 minutes, and I got back out and sat for another hour. Then I come back in, and I said, well, I'll just leave the cameras out the rest of the night, and I'll pick them up in the morning. So I go back to the room, and bear in mind, this is the third day. I haven't even sat down yet anywhere. So I get in the room, get a good hot shower. It's about 4:30 in the morning. I go to bed. I get up about 9 o'clock the next morning. By the time I get everything together and go pick up some stuff from the store I had to have for the investigation the next night, because I had enough supplies to do what I need to when I got there. But I wasn't, you know, anticipating it being that cold, and we know what that temperature does to batteries.
You darn tootin'.
They don't last. So I had to go get some fresh batteries, and I get back over to her house about 11:15. And me and her sit down, and she's having coffee. It's still, you know, cold, muggy looking outside and snowing. So we're sitting in there having coffee. So I said, well, I'd like to go out and do some walking today in these areas around these drainage basins, because there's a huge drainage basin up there. There's ditches cut everywhere, you know, all these big fields, and there's ditches running along the side of them where all the water drains out of the field, and they all run back to this river. So I told her that we needed to go out and check these out, and she wanted to go. So I said, well, we're going to be hiking in this snow, you know, pretty much all day. I mean, if you're up for that, I mean, that's what I'm going to be doing. You can sit in the car if you want to, but I got to go out and check all this out. So we get out, and I probably, hiked with her about 20, 25 miles that day. I mean, it was a long day. It was a long day. And get in about 4 o'clock, 4:30, I finally come back. I think it was 4:30. I can't remember the exact time. I was so tired at that point. But I got back in anyway, and the following day I went and picked the cameras back up down there in the other place and checked it. Nobody had been down there now for 2 days. The cameras had been set out. So I go down there, and it's a good thing I got those batteries when I did, because if I hadn't, we wouldn't have got anything if we did have something come through. But none of the cameras snapped. And I can say this, there was nothing moving up there in this area at this
time. Cold. Yeah, probably too cold.
I got on two trails of a rabbit. I got on a trail of two different rabbits. One of them was being trailed by a coyote. He probably got the rabbit because I quit trailing him after about 3 miles. And then I got on a trail of a deer and trailed him for about probably 5 miles. I found a large buck frozen in the river that me and Melissa ran across. And she was determined we were going to get that thing out of there. I'm like, look, there was half of its antler on one side sticking up out of the ice. The rest of it was completely frozen solid in ice. And I was like, there is no way we can get that thing out. I was like, I don't have an air hammer.
Right.
You know, here on I told her, you're just going to have to wait till it thaws if you want, to retrieve the skeleton to see what happened to it. I mean, there's unless you come out there with a sledgehammer and, some picks, you're not going to get it out. But she did run across my attention. That being said, I found, that. But having not known that particular fact at the time when we found the bone that had some hair on it, which I have taken and had it sent off.
Mm-hmm.
Come back. I took it to people that know about these things, and it is in fact a scapula from a white-tailed deer, and the hair on it is all white-tailed deer hair. There's nothing on it. It's been gone over with a fine-tooth comb. There's not even any predatory hair or anything on it.
Right.
Where it was actually left at was the same area, though, where she had this sighting.
Wow.
Naturally, it got my curiosity up. So I had, I told her, I said, we'll check it out and see if anything's touched it. Anything measurable has messed with it. I mean, outside of a turkey vulture picking it up and toting it somewhere. But it probably came off the one that was frozen in the river, because I went the other way the day before, and I went that way up the river the next day. And it was, probably 300, 400 yards up there to it from this actual location. But, if I could have seen the carcass, I could have told you if that's where it came from or not. I don't know, because it was submerged in ice. I have no idea. It could have come from a different one. I mean, hunting season had just went out like 2 days before I got up there.
Right.
So you don't know if people have been in the woods hunting and probably wounded one and it got away or something, and we don't know. But I can honestly say, though, that all the tracking I did up there, I didn't run across anything that was unusual. And I really don't think that, my personal opinion, I don't think he's still up there in that area. I think he's probably passed on through, because there hasn't been a visual sighting of him in that area in the last 3 months.
Right.
There's been some suspicious-looking prints, not necessarily a full print, but some suspicious-looking tracks to some people. And some of them can, most of them, 99% of them can be explained away. They're not supposed to have any bears in that area, but that doesn't, there's no fence anywhere to keep a wild animal from going where he wants to go.
Right.
So, with that being said, I know what a bear track is. I've, tracked and hunted them before, and they actually had one ramble through that area at one point in time. Now, it wasn't at the same time. This was much later. This was 2 to 3 months after the fact of the sighting. They found a few tracks, and she took pictures of them. I looked at them all, and the ones I looked at, from what I made out of all the ones that we went through, they were pretty much bear tracks, and it could be explained by other means. Some of them were some partial tracks from a human wearing shoes, and then the bear stepped on it and made it look different.
Sure.
Tracks within tracks, but all of them weren't really they're not anything that you could just sit down and say, wow, and look at them. I mean, you really had to look at them really hard, because they were not very detailed tracks at all, because of the material they were on. It was very hard.
Right.
But we went up there.
Well,
we did the investigation. We did what we said we were going to do. And I told her we should come back and be, you know, looking forward to coming through that area again because the floods and whatnot that have happened this year in the areas just north of there have flooded some of the basins, and some of the basins are still flooded. And what pushed them down, they've never had anything come through there like that before. There's never been in that area any kind of, you know, record because there's not really much in that area as far as, you know, good hardwoods and anything like that. Like I said, the only trees you're going to find are right directly along the waterway, and they're not going to be 15, 20 yards, you know, through the whole thick of the trees, and the rest of it's just open field, and you can see for miles.
Yeah, well, Iowa is what they call Iowa, Nebraska, all those states in there, they're corn and wheat countries.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no trees, to say, you know, very, very few. And it's mostly used to be prairie land, stuff like that. Wow. Well, that was pretty good. I mean, you had an interesting time. Unfortunately, you didn't get a chance to find anything significant. But the encounter experience that they had was pretty... pretty significant, and it was pretty unique, really. I thought, especially when it was really, to me, was the gifting, you know, turtle shells and little skeletal remains of different animals and stuff, leaving them for them. It's pretty neat.
It is. I mean, but like I said, there wasn't anything like that that, you know, happened in a significant time when I was there. I mean, most of the stuff that I went through, that I didn't...
No, I understand. Well, you went out and investigated the area. And,
well, we went out and looked.
Sure, and it was pretty cold, so I'm sure that during the couple of days that you were there, the cold snap was enough to keep most of the animals out of the fields.
Well, it didn't warm up till actually I'd been home for a... I'd been back for a week before it actually the temperature finally, you know, got up where it was in the mid 20s, low 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, you don't ever know what's going to happen with that. And they've had another snowstorm, from what I gather, come through that area.
Sure.
Again, since that.
And well, Rob, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight to tell it, give us a good full report on what took place. And thank you for coming on to do that.
No problem. It's a pleasure.
I'm looking forward to, obviously, for more in the future. You know that.
Oh, most definitely.
You take care, my friend, and I'll see you soon. I'm going to mute you out, but you just hang. If you want to, you can hang on and listen to the show.
All right, guys. Good night, all.
Take care. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it was Rob Price. We're going to go do a quickie commercial here. And be right back.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage, available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our next guest is John from Alabama, and him and his friend, actually it was a Bigfoot hotline call that I met John, and they were in an extremist situation. Good evening, John. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing well. Why don't you just give us a little background on what took place and when it took place and how your encounter took place.
Well, I'd like to say about a week ago, or a week and a half, me and my friend went camping on a weekend. You know, we went camping there maybe once before, and nothing happened unusually, but there's something I really didn't want to go. I just went because there's nothing else to do. So when we got out there, it was about sunset, and we set up everything, and nothing really happened for the first few hours. But I'd like to say about 10 o'clock-ish, we'd start hearing noises in the woods. And up there, I coyote hunt, and I've never heard any coyotes being up there. And we just thought, you know, it's rabbits. But I'd like to say about 11:30, we were sitting by the fire, and my friend Landon said, "What's that over there?" And I looked over, and it was the biggest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It was about 8 foot maybe, and I just saw the outline walk from the fire. It just walked right back into the woods, and it was gone, and me and him just took off. Landon, which is my friend, he went in the tent.
Mm-hmm.
I took off. So when I ran, I guess I tripped. So mm-hmm. just something. I knocked myself out, basically.
Yeah, I know. And Landon was really worried. He called me on the Bigfoot Hotline. He said, "What do I do?"
Yeah, he told me all about that. He was he said, "If you kept trying to light a fire," and he was just terrified to go out there. And finally, I came back, too, and I realized what happened. And I heard a gunshot, and I guess Landon was shooting at him, I guess. I don't know. But I went back, and Landon was all shook up. I was still in that concussed state where I really didn't know what was going on. And so he finally told me that he was hearing all these noises in the woods while I was lost, apparently. And we finally got the fire back, and we was hearing, like, tree knocks and whistling in the woods. It was pretty crazy.
Well, now, Landon called me while he was in the tent, and he was really upset and excited, and he didn't know what to do. And he asked me, you know, "I'm going to go out there and shoot it." And I said, "Please don't do that." I said, "First of all, it's very dangerous to do that." I said, "You know, when you shoot something that's that big, it's probably not going to die, and it's probably going to get angry and come and do something that it hasn't done anything so far."
With the small caliber rifle that we had, that barely killed a deer.
Well, I know, so I told him. I said, "The best thing you do is you don't got to worry about the creature." I said, "The creatures don't usually attack people, or even they're not really aggressive towards people. Just stay." I said, "Have you got a campfire?" And he said, "Yeah, mm-hmm. but it's just coals." And I said, "Well, put some wood on the campfire, get it going." And I said, "Not mm-hmm. so much for the creature, but for other animals that could be in the area there as well. You want to keep them out of your mm-hmm. campsite." And so then you came back and then took the phone, and then we talked. It was pretty mm-hmm. pretty neat experience.
I won't forget it.
I know. And I tell you, it's Landon was so upset. And I don't blame him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, most everybody does. It's a scary thing to see something that big.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you ran into the woods there and then you didn't come back, he was really scared.
Yeah.
But
I wasn't, but like maybe 20 feet from the tent.
Yeah, I know. Well, gosh, John, I really appreciate you calling us and telling us and sharing your story tonight with everybody. What I want to extend to you is invitation to be a part of our Bigfoot family. And as things go along, if the Bigfoot bug bites you or bit you
mm-hmm.
And you're interested, well, keep your eyes open and ears peeled and stuff, and keep in touch with us from time to time. And if you hear anything, give us a call, and we'll keep in touch with you. And
we
certainly value your friendship.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate y'all. I mean, without y'all to talk to, I'd probably go insane.
No. Yeah, and don't worry. And if you tell people that that you had this kind of an experience, you know what's going to happen. I mean, they're all going to think you're nuts.
Yeah.
But don't worry, you're not nuts. There's the reason for this show is there's so mm-hmm. many people out there that don't realize. Now, you guys were not looking for anything. You were just out camping.
Oh, no.
And this happened. And 99% of the time, that's what does happen. It's people just are doing their normal little things, driving on a road, camping out, even in their backyard. More than ever, recently, there's been many, many encounters right near small towns, right in the, I mean, right on the periphery of the town.
Yep.
And so, I mean, it's you know, it's not like they have to be way out in the wilderness.
They frequent
all over.
I was maybe 300 yards from a highway.
Sure.
So I went back out there, actually, this last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And stayed the night again with another one of my friends, because he was the kind of person that was like, okay, yeah, prove it.
Sure.
So we went out there, and about an hour past 1 o'clock in the morning, he wanted to go home. He was scared. I said, there's something to be scared of. He goes, man, once that thing comes out, I said, it's going to come out either way, even if it does. I mean, just act normal.
Well, I think they're curious, and I think what they do is, they're just like, I mean, you've been out deer hunting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what deer do? They completely circle around behind you and come up behind
you.
And then the next thing you know, you hear a snort, and he almost scares you to death.
It does.
Right, and then... So, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. They're curious, and they watch us. But the thing is that where you see one doesn't necessarily mean that's the only one that's there. And the other thing is we don't want to harm those creatures.
No.
I mean, unless it's to protect our life or something like that.
Yeah.
Because we don't know if they're not human or not, or what, you know, what they are. We just don't know.
I told Landon easily, if he shot, that could have been me walking.
Well, yeah, it could have been anybody in the dark like that.
Yeah, he darn could have killed me and a regular person.
Yeah, I know.
But, I mean, heck, he was screaming at the top of his lungs for me.
Yep. Yeah. Well, when he called on the phone, he was real excited. And
that's just his personality.
Yep. Well, that's all right. I mean, it happens, and it's okay. And we got him calmed down. And everything worked out fine. John, I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thanks for having
me. And we'll keep in touch with you, okay?
Definitely.
You can listen to the rest of the show here. I'm going to mute you out. But you can listen to the rest of the show. And we got some pretty good stuff coming up.
Sounds good.
Take care.
You too.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is John from Alabama. And... what we're going to do is we're going to talk to Scott of California and talk about his. Well, I think we're going to talk. Scott, where are you? We lost Scott. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Scott dropped off the air, and I think I know why. He was pretty shy. He was pretty shy. What we're going to do is we're going to go to a break here, and then what we're going to do is come back and we'll talk with Leroy about some Patterson footprints. Here we go.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks on the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
Lives, a movie, at www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And we're back. Here we go. Our next guest is Leroy. And Leroy, how are you tonight?
I'm doing okay, Marco. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Our previous guest here, Scott, I think his battery went dead on his phone. And he just kind of dropped right off the line there. So I'm pretty sure this would happen. He didn't charge his phone up before we started the show. Leroy, last week we were talking about the Patterson-Gimlin film and the different aspects of it. And different parts were made at different times. Different companies owned the rights to the stuff. Now, this past week, you've been doing some other research, and you came up with some really revealing things. And could you talk to us about that? This is the footprints that are shown in the Patterson-Gimlin film, right?
Yes. But see, the tracks they show in the PG film is actually not the tracks from the Bigfoot from the film. That was filmed in another location. It was like the cast prints they show from that film site is not actually the cast prints made by the Bigfoot, neither. Just the other night, I got a call, and people were sitting there asking me about this tracking dog film. And so I said, well, I'll go ahead and take a look at it. So I was taking a look at it. And as I was taking a look at it, then I started going back to all my research on the PG film. I found out them were the same tracks that Bigfoot left. Okay, that tracking dog film was filmed on Labor Day weekend of 1967. And at that time was also the Bigfoot being filmed at the same time, because I found the tracks. They match the feet that's on the Bigfoot, the tracks they show in the tracking dog film, and I've also found the shoes that the Bigfoot, Roger used for the Bigfoot. I matched them up. I got a match. I know the shoes that they wore in the Bigfoot suit. I matched them up, and the feet and the shoes match up perfectly. I've also found the company that developed the film for Roger Patterson and them. And I talked to them, and they verified they was the one that developed the film for Roger and them. But when I was sitting there doing research on this, I've been finding more stuff out, and it's like it's all falling into place now, because even John Green's film of Jim McLaren, as I was watching that, I noticed some things in the film that he was showing. Then I went back and started looking over the PG film, just a part of the Bigfoot, because that's the only thing you can watch anyway on it, because all the rest of the stuff was added in 1968. And to my surprise, that John Green's film that he got of Jim McLaren walking in 1968 had been filmed before the Bigfoot film. Because there was some difference in between some of the things I pointed out, which I showed you, and I showed you
sure.
The shoes that
right.
Matched the feet of the Bigfoot, and I, you know, matched them up with the prints there, and come to find out that the first viewing of this at D'Atley's house, there was people present was Roger Patterson, Al D'Atley, John Green, Rennie DeHinden, and Jim McLaren, and all them people at that site during that filming in September Labor Day weekend. I think it was the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. They had 3 days to do all the filming they need because that was the last report of actually Bigfoot prints being spotted there. It was after Labor Day weekend of that year. Even Roger Patterson, when he claimed that he found, you know, filmed Bigfoot in October, then was really not reported in, like, big reports like you would find in Bigfoot reports. Last ones that people actually seen that worked in that area during that time was the 3 different tracks that they found around Bluff Creek, which was in Bluff Creek, and up in Blue Creek Mountains on Onion Mountain Road. And them all tracks match the feet of the Bigfoot that they have in their film.
Gee. And Wallace was a part of that, right?
Ray Wallace is the one that made the feet for Roger Patterson because the shoes that I found, okay, of Ray Wallace's shoes matched the feet of the Bigfoot and the PG film.
Yeah, kind of like a fingerprint, right?
Yeah, you could tell they're exactly the same. They have the notch in the ball of the foot, the toes line up, the heels line up, just like the left foot where I thought there wasn't no toes on it, actually were because I got clearer images of it now. And you can actually see the toes on it, and they line up with the shoes that Dale Wallace was had in his hand when they had photos of that. And you can actually see nail holes on the side of where they attached fur to the shoes.
Oh, my goodness. Jeez. Amazing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's what
the further you go, the deeper it goes, and the more stuff it unwinds.
Well, when I started looking over everything, okay, and start matching up and finding the prints, match the same film size, you know, as Roger Patterson's Bigfoot, it had been filmed the same time. Now, they can make it to fall colors because, you know, you've seen the photos I sent you where you could take the background and change the colors in the trees to make it look like it was fall.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
And when I started studying now, I was like, both of these, the tracking dog film and the Bigfoot part of the film, the PG film, all line up. They all have the same prints. They all have the same feet on the Bigfoot and in the tracks they show there. And it was actually made by Ray Wallace.
Huh. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, with the part about Jim McLaren walking in 1968 at Bluff Creek, the funniest part about that one is when I took both frames, I took frame 352 from the PG film, I looked over it, looked over all the trees and all the grass, see everything lining up, and the frame from with Jim McLaren in it from John Green's film, and I found, hey, wait a minute, there's bark missing on this tree in the PG film, but the bark is there in in John Green's film. Now, how can that, you know, how can they take bark off of a tree?
Right.
Okay, and these are dead trees. And then there was some branches where you can see they cut off. And you can actually see that dog print that was in a PG film that M.K. Davis points out. Okay, there is a dog print there, but you can also see it in John Green's film, too.
Huh.
And I can point them out. And that's why I said, wait a minute. I said, when I start looking at these, and they're only supposed to be filmed like 9 months apart, bark don't grow back that fast, one. And two, a dead tree does not grow bark back on it at all.
Right.
And it's like,
once it's gone, it's gone.
That's right. So I was like, this had been filmed before the Bigfoot was filmed.
Wow.
And when I was studying over the Bigfoot, actually, if you line up both Bigfoots, okay, you'll find out the first part of the walk, okay, was a shorter Bigfoot. Second part of walk was a bigger Bigfoot. Okay, it was actually two different people in the same suit, but it was just two different people.
Right.
That did that Bigfoot part in Roger Patterson's film.
Well, we know that Bob Hieronymus,
he did the first
just walk. The way he walks was, it's just absolutely, you know.
Well, you see one of the ones I line up with the other person. I'm not going to mention his name right now.
No, I understand.
The one I line up for that one. But the first part of walk was, I got to say, would be Bob Hieronymus because when he was pushing off on his right foot.
Sure.
But the second walk, I would have to say it was the other person that I showed you.
Sure.
Because he don't push off with his right foot. And the way he was motioning his body and the way he looked, you know, it was identical. It was like, to me, it seemed like that was a practice run. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the way the back arched up and the way the legs was moving and the way the arms was moving, it was like, wait a minute, this tracking dog film goes in with this Bigfoot part of the film, of PG film, and then Jim McLaren walking and John Green's film, they all match and they're all done in the same location.
Oh, man.
And I actually have a letter stating that's how I knew what time it was that tracking dog film was filmed, because I have a letter stating about they send five guys from, I think it's Humboldt College, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that was the same college that Jim McLaren was going at that same year.
Oh, my.
And talking about having a tracking dog at Bluff Creek, because they found three sets of footprints. Well, actually, it was two sets of footprints first. And then they said it was there, and then they didn't get there till Friday, which starts Labor Day weekend, and then at the report after that, then you've got the three tracks. And it said the reports were up in Bluff Creek and Mountain Onion Road and the Blue Creek Mountain.
Wow. Amazing. Have there been any other things that's taken place since we talked?
What do you mean?
Oh, other things that you found? You're looking at a lot of different stuff.
Oh, there's a lot of things I found, and people's talking about, you know, proof now and evidence, you know, because, you know, either side can't prove it's real or fake or, you
right.
know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Well, from what I found now, I got actually more evidence now for it to be a hoax than real. But what tears me up is the people that's involved in this
right.
is mainly the main four people that got this Bigfoot thing started.
Right.
You know. And
our heroes.
Yeah. You know, you got John Green, you got Rene DeHinden, you got Roger Patterson, and Jim McLaren. That's when he first started in it, because he started making a sculpture in Willow Creek. And then, you know, Bob Gimlin somewhere in the line there, you know what I'm saying? And then
yeah.
Bob Titmus right along with it. And the tracks that they even got is all found in Ron Olson's documentary from 1974.
Whoa.
And
amazing.
That's less like a fingerprint, like you said. A track and matches the feet, that's a fingerprint, you know. And that's what they do use in a court of law. So I'm sitting there, I match all the tracks together, and all these films are just done around the same time. They had to be. Because there was fresh
Jeez.
Tracks in the tracking dog film. The feet matched the Bigfoot in the Patterson film. So they all matched, and I was like, there you go. I got all my answers, and now I start making my contacts and everything else, and I find out where the film was developed. Okay? It was developed in Seattle, Washington. I'm not going to name the company right now, but they also develop film for news anchors, news stations. And they're actually open 7 days a week, and it was even open 7 days a week back then. But they don't know specifically what time they brought it in because they have no records of it, but they do know that they did develop film for them.
Jeez. Amazing. Amazing. And plus all the stuff that you'd come up with last week. About the different film companies and when the films were made. Actually, the one was listed as a sci-fi film.
Yeah.
Science fiction film.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's the
original
film that they show today.
Yep. And
that's a PG film.
Yeah. And the range that has taken place since over these, 40-some years now.
Yeah, and if everybody was looking for the truth, was, you know, if the film was real or not, all they had to do was look at the end of the film.
It says right on it, right?
Yeah, it says SFS, which stands for Science Fiction Subject.
Right. amazing. Good gosh.
That's what
I'll tell you.
Someone asked me the other day, sitting there saying, boy, what you found and can blow everybody out of water. I said, well, it's kind of got me nervous about it a little bit, because it's like, these are people that was involved in doing all this. was the people that started everything.
Well, yeah, and we were all, I mean, to Tom, the Patterson film was his, I mean, that's what got him started in the whole business.
Mm-hmm.
And many other people, I'm sure, the same thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's not easy to, when you find out, I mean, it's not easy to divulge the truth after 40-some years. It's already been a religion. And so now you're breaking everybody's belief system.
Well,
and,
like I said, I'm not out to show people that they're not real because I've seen one myself. Okay?
No. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about the authenticity of the film and the authenticity of the encounter. And it's turning out, it was a hoax. And much of the evidence has been collected to support that. And and this is what started most everybody that I know of into the Bigfoot business, you know, into their own research. It's amazing.
Yeah, I got like about, I don't know, over 100 CDs with number Patterson files on it.
Wow.
Those images, frames, and everything else. Just like I even found a frame of them doing tests on color charts on one of the frames, which I showed you that one, I think.
Yeah.
And that's where they got that red marks from.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people said, about blood and stuff like that. That's not blood. Actually,
right.
That was just, they just added too much red.
Yeah,
to
the coloring of the...
The film.
Of the film.
That's why they only have pieces of it, because they was using them as tests.
Well, people forget there wasn't digital in those days.
Mm-hmm.
It was all film, and photography was an art of time and exposure and of film, the film consistency in time.
Yeah.
With light.
Just like it took me when I was colorizing, the fall colors in the back of the frames I was showing you. It takes about a good 4 or 5 hours to do that.
Sure.
Then you got probably about another 10 hours behind that just to clear up the other parts of the film, to make it look just right.
Yep. Well, gosh, Leroy, I want to thank you for coming on and again this week just to, the further you go, the more stuff you find. And you seem to unravel and unravel more and more. I thank you for all your research. And for the hard work you've been doing. And thank you for sharing that with us tonight.
Oh, no problem, Marco.
And I wish you the best of luck. I hope it doesn't rain too hard there. I hope you're safe.
Yeah, I'm just watching out for the river right now because I don't
know. I know. Well, it's already happened once, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Last year.
Well, you take care, and thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us.
All right, thanks, Marco.
Take care now.
You too, bud. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Leroy. Well, here we are, the close of another show. All our folks out there, I know your Tom will be back next week, and we'll obviously have some more exciting guests on the show. I can't tell you enough. You just won't believe. Our Bigfoot hotline. Now, we get a lot of crank calls to young kids trying to play jokes on us and stuff. That happens all the time. But I'm going to tell you, John, tonight, or last week when he called, his friend Landon called, there's nothing like the real thing in a real circumstance. I mean, the tension, the excitement, the poor guy was going crazy. And it took a couple of minutes to talk him down into reality, and that happens because when you lose it, it's difficult to keep your mind about yourself. But you folks just keep on calling in on the Bigfoot Hotline, and there's lots of stuff that's happening out there all over the country. And I want to say hi to everybody out there. Good night. We'll see you all next week. Keep Bigfooting, and you guys take care now. Bye bye.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monster mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. What brought them